Hi, everyone. Super quick reminder, we are looking for anywhere from 1 to 3 hosts for our podcast after we're done with Avatar. You can find the application for that in the description of this episode below.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah, Serena.
We all know that we heavily endorse therapy on this podcast.
Yes, we do.
And this episode is a bit dark.
Yes, that is correct.
Would we say that Katara should be getting therapy in this episode?
You know, Katara does go on an emotional journey, but yeah, therapy would probably help.
Remember, kids, it's always best to talk to a licensed professional about your traumas and try to work through them so you don't inadvertently pass them on to others or let them negatively affect your behavior. I'm Serena Schreifels.
And I'm Tyler Strandberg.
And you're listening to the Avatar Podcast.
Yep, yep. On this podcast, we watch the Nickelodeon show Avatar: The Last Airbender and analyze the plot, themes, and characters.
At the end of each episode, we'll talk about who our favorite character was, as well as give the episode a rating on a scale of 1 to 10.
You're listening to the Avatar Podcast.
Yep, yep.
All right, Serena. And today on the Avatar Podcast, we will be discussing the 16th episode of Book 3, titled The Southern Raiders.
Ooh, I know about that one.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you know that my high school mascot was the Raiders?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we were pirates. Like, that was our mascot, pirates, and we were called, like, the Raiders.
Why not just the pirates?
I don't know. Honestly, like, looking back on it, it doesn't make sense. Like, what is a raider? I know back in the 70s, the mascot was a raccoon because, like, it would raid garbages, you know?
I like
but
that
they
better.
They changed it because it wasn't cool enough or whatever to a pirate because pirates are raiders, but I don't know. It's weird.
You should have a pirate raccoon. Now, that's cool.
That. I could get behind that.
I know.
That is like a double raider.
Yeah. Double raider. Raiders. But in this particular raider, the Southern Raiders, the Avatar and his friends are forced on the run again after Azula finds them at the Western Air Temple. Zuko confronts Katara about her distrustful disposition toward him and thinks of a way to gain her friendship. He decides to help Katara find the Fire Nation soldier responsible for killing her mother. Together, they find the man. However, Katara is unable to exact her revenge upon him. After returning, she finally forgives Zuko and accepts him into the group.
This episode premiered on Nickelodeon on July 17th, 2008, and was written by Elizabeth Welsh Ehaz. Okay, but, like, back to the Raiders, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, their mascot is a sea raven, and they're still called the Raiders.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I think that they should have a sea raccoon.
Who's also a pirate.
Yes. Oh, see, now we're getting somewhere.
We are big brain energy.
Oh, my God. If only they would have consulted us beforehand.
Honestly.
It would have been 10 times better.
I mean, I was, like, what, 10 when this episode came out? Like, I could have given them this useful information.
Yeah, we would have known that at that age.
Honestly.
Especially at that age.
Well, I mean, that was when I was in school for, like, the Raiders, you know?
Yeah. Ugh,
whatever. Anyway, so let's dive into things to know. Let's figure out another word instead of dive in.
Last time it was zip.
I'm self-conscious of that.
Last time it was zip. All the other times before that was dive.
zap.
Yo, let's zap right over.
Guess what next time it's going to be?
Don't say zop. I swear to God.
Okay. Let's zap on over like a lightning bolt.
Why did you say that so weird?
I don't know. I kind of just figured, like, ka-chow, you know?
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started on that film, that masterpiece.
So, when Sokka's recounting the day his mother died in a flashback, the Black Snow can be seen. The Black Snow was previously seen in The Siege of the North Part 1 and The Puppet Master, and, according to Sokka, warns of the Fire Nation's approach. During this flashback, he says many of the warriors had already seen the Black Snow before, and they knew what it meant, a Fire Nation raid.
That would be super scary. I'm just going to say.
Yeah, I think so too. It's like a weird, like, warning.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yikes. Mm-hmm.
This is the first and only time in the series where viewers see Kaya's face and hear her voice. In the swamp, only her back is depicted.
Whaletail Island was first mentioned in Lake Laogai as a place where Appa could have been taken after being bought on the black market.
This is funny. Zuko is the second person to push Katara out of the way of falling rocks, the first being Aang in the Cave of Two Leather. The Cave of Two Love. The Cave of Two Lovebirds.
There you go.
Because Aang and Katara, mwah, mwah.
It's like Katara's like, help me.
Save me. The rocks are my weakness.
The rocks are a fallen, and I ain't no earthbender. I'm just a waterbender.
Waterbender.
I can't waterbend the rocks out of my way. I need a big, strong man to push me. I'm sorry. Katara would probably be so mad about that, too.
Katara would waterbend all the water out of
honestly,
your butt.
How dare the writers portray Katara as, like, this helpless girl, woman, who needs to be pushed out of the wave or saved from some falling rocks. Not just once, but twice.
Twice over.
I'm more forgiving of this one because it's like an attack where, like, in the first one, when Aang pushed her out of the way, she was literally just standing there.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
She wasn't even trying to run or anything. She was literally just standing there. Okay, yeah. Aang's line, is it your turn to take a little field trip with Zuko, is a direct reference to the previous three episodes in which Aang and Sokka both went on individual journeys with Zuko, which inevitably caused with the two bonding or dating, you know, with Zuko and Sokka.
Yes, yeah. 100%. Yeah. I love it. I want to take a field trip with Zuko.
Me too.
When is it my turn? Anyway, this is the first time Aang has a noticeable moral dilemma with killing the Fire Lord.
What's going to happen when he faces Zuko's father?
Oh, no, it's somebody's dad.
And he's like, I can't kill Ozai. That's somebody's dad. That's my friend's dad. And Zuko's like, hey, you can kill my dad. It's okay.
Give me permission to kill my dad.
God. Okay. When Katara is seen as a child in the flashbacks, her winter coat with the crescent moon closely resembles the winter coat she wore in the Northern Water Tribe while mastering waterbending with Master Paku. I thought this was interesting. Like, it could be a possible connection to, like, being a learning / practicing waterbender.
Yeah, it's definitely a little Easter egg. I mean, now that we know, that's why Yon-Rot was there.
Right.
And she's seen wearing that. So it's like, it's just cool to know, and it just makes the sacrifice even more heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, that took a turn for the sad.
This is the only episode where Kaya's name is mentioned and Hakoda is the only person to actually say her name out loud.
In this episode, waterbending is seen performed as influenced by two primary opportune factors, that is, the presence of a full moon and rain. In addition, waterbending is seen under the influence of a strong emotion, yet another strong factor that determines the potency of the art's use.
Aang shows lack of concern when Toph and Haru earthbend a tunnel into an air nomad painting, and he never mentions anything about the destruction of the atrium and fountain. This contrasts his thoughts about the destruction of the air temples in the Northern Air Temple. However, it should be noted that the Mechanist was making changes to the air temple for his own benefit, while Toph and Haru were trying to help escape a Fire Nation attack.
Look. I have strong opinions on this. I have strong opinions on the Northern Air Temple. Mm-hmm. I fully agree with Aang, and I am so pissed off with how he kind of just goes like, no, you made this place your home. I'm again fully pissed off that he thinks it's just okay that they can earthbend a tunnel, especially when the rest of them fly out of there on Appa. Like, can you not earthbend a tunnel somewhere else that isn't a painting, maybe like 20 feet over? Like,
Tyler is just a connoisseur and protector of the artistic history.
Look,
of
I do think that culture
Avatar
is important, and I think that, like, the fact that they're destroying these temples willy-nilly is, like, pretty problematic. I mean, I think it definitely has a thing to say about, like, what war does, but then they show, like, our heroes destroying it as well with just, like, no personal care. It bothers me.
I do have one counter argument with that.
Mm-hmm.
Existing Avatar, The Last Airbender paintings, or the existence of the series Avatar, The Last Airbender with the characters alive and well.
Okay, hear me out.
Okay.
Tunnel in painting or move over 20 feet to the wall that has no painting and make a tunnel there.
I would just say, Tyler, if you were an earthbender, would you consciously make that decision when you were woken up and
no, but that's the point is like if I were woke enough, yes. But like that's the point is like it's making a point that like they clearly don't care about air nomad culture and like Aang doesn't seem to either because he's just like, oh, you guys made this place your home.
This is a source of another source of trauma here.
No, this just causes me extreme stress. Like
stress is a symptom of trauma.
I don't like this. Okay, so the turbulent weather and moody lighting in this episode is also representative of Katara's emotional state.
And Tyler's emotional state regarding
honestly,
the
like,
destruction of culture.
Where's the turbulent weather during the Northern Air Temple episode in season one? I hate that episode. God, this is, I'm having war flashbacks now.
Well, according to the commentary of this episode, the sound used when Sokka sucked the flower into his mouth was actually a power drill.
I love that. I think that's so funny.
I think it's on brand.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. I have things to say about that, but that'll be my verdict.
Very good.
Okay. So let's dive into our theme here for this episode, which is the lasting effects of trauma. And it's kind of become my favorite theme.
We're back with trauma.
Here we are. And it's become a joke in the fandom how often Katara brings up her mother. But like to me, that's always been super frustrating because it's like clearly a major life event that has affected her and like stuck with her for a very long time.
And this episode does a great job at showing us just how deeply this event has hurt Katara and what the emotional burden of carrying this around with her has actually done.
And before we start, I do want to point you out to a video on the Hello Future Me YouTube channel, which is run by Tim Hickson, which is called The Cycle of War, and it almost entirely focuses on this episode. I watched that video for research, and I didn't want to repeat a lot of the same things that he said in that video. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be bringing up things that he said in that video, but I didn't want to just kind of, like, carbon copy what he said. So I'm going to refer you to that. And also, like, things that we do bring up will be cited.
The episode starts with a clear connection that Katara has associated Zuko with the loss of her mother. To Katara, Zuko is everything that the Fire Nation represents, as we heard her talk about in The Crossroads of Destiny.
You're a terrible person, you know that? Always following us, hunting the Avatar, trying to capture the world's last hope for peace? But what do you care? You're the Fire Lord's son. Spreading war and violence and hatred is in your blood.
It's just that for so long now, whenever I would imagine the face of the enemy, it was your face.
Because Katara only associates Zuko with the Fire Nation, she sees that all the Fire Nation's horrible actions are being celebrated when Zuko is celebrated. And because of his betrayal to her in the Crossroads of Destiny, it's more difficult for her to move beyond that and only see him as a person.
Because Katara sees Zuko as a representation of the entire Fire Nation, that is also likely the reason why she associates Zuko with the death of her mother. In the Crossroads of Destiny, they shared that they had that in common. But with the betrayal, Katara only sees Zuko as the enemy and the representation of the Fire Nation, along with the worst possible thing the Fire Nation has done to her, killing her mother. Zuko and Sokka talk about this connection that becomes a recurring point throughout the episode.
Nah, she doesn't hate you. Katara doesn't hate anyone, except maybe some people in the Fire Nation. No, I mean, not people who are good but used to be bad. I mean, bad people. Fire Nation people who are still bad, who've never been good and probably won't be ever.
Stop. Okay, listen. I know this may seem out of nowhere, but I want you to tell me what happened to your mother.
What? Why would you want to know that?
Katara mentioned it before when we were imprisoned together in Ba Sing Se, and again just now when she was yelling at me. I think somehow she's connected her anger about that to her anger at me.
And it's followed throughout the rest of the episode how Katara connects people from the Fire Nation to what happened to her mother, which Aang compares to Jet.
She needs this, Aang. This is about getting closure and justice.
I don't think so. I think it's about getting revenge.
Fine. Maybe it is. Maybe that's what I need. Maybe that's what he deserves.
Katara, you sound like Jet.
Tim Hickson from Hello Future Me talks about how this contributes to what he calls the cycle of war. Loss becomes anger, anger becomes vengeance, and vengeance becomes loss. Jet is a representation of anger becomes vengeance in this scenario.
Similarly to Katara right now, Jet began to associate anyone from the Fire Nation with the atrocious deeds that they have done, including to Jet himself, such as like when the Fire Nation attacked his village and killed his parents. And this is most noticeable when Jet is attacking an old man in the forest.
Do you like destroying towns? Do you like destroying families? Do you?
Oh, please, let me go. Have mercy.
Does the Fire Nation let people go? Does the Fire Nation have mercy?
We see this as Katara finishes her journey and to try to find vengeance for her mother, treating multiple Fire Nation soldiers and citizens as inhuman, as if they were evil. And this is perhaps most pronounced when she decided to bloodbend on the leader of the Southern Raiders, something she swore that she would never do again.
Furthermore, at the end of this episode, we see Katara embrace the same energy as Jet, even switching the positions between Yun-Ra and Katara to display a power structure.
As a child, Yun-Ra held power over Katara and ended up killing her mother, but now it's clear that he is at her mercy, and more importantly, her anger.
Like before, Katara does not see Yun-Ra as a person, instead as an evil being who stole everything important to Katara and an entire representation of the Fire Nation in the war.
That was him. That was the monster.
Katara is even about to go as far as killing Yun-Ra as an act of justice for what he did to her mother, but she's able to stop herself.
I always wondered what kind of person could do such a thing. But now that I see you, I think I understand. There's just nothing inside you. Nothing at all. You're pathetic and sad and empty.
Please spare me.
But as much as I hate you, I just can't do it.
We've seen Katara act vengefully throughout the entire episode, so it comes as a shock to us when she doesn't follow through.
However, like she states, it takes a different kind of person to be able to commit an act like that. Yun-Ra is willing to sacrifice his own mother to save his own life, and he's an empty shell of a man. Where Katara, she still deeply cares about people, no matter how evil they may be. She claims Yun-Ra is empty inside, and it's clear that she herself is not. She's able to experience trauma and feel its grasp on her, but still have compassion for others.
That video did a great job of kind of wrapping up this entire episode, so I felt like I couldn't branch too far out of it. So I'm just encouraging you to go watch it. It's called The Cycle of War, and it's on the YouTube channel Hello Future Me.
Oh my god, it's our girl. Mm. Hello.
Our main character for this episode.
Hey, babe. Hey, Katara.
Oh, I thought it was Katakana.
You can leave now.
Catamaran.
Catamaran.
God, we shouldn't be making fun of Katara's name during her trauma episode.
Oh, that's right.
But I love making fun of Katara's name.
Catamaran. I love it.
Cooties.
Cooties with a K.
Not the charcuterie.
Oh, we're giving her more trauma.
Oh my god.
Katara, sweetie, we've seen you grow so much as a character throughout this series, especially with her bending. And this episode only gives us more examples to prove that.
Yeah, and there's a few parallels in this episode to moments in season one to emphasize how much stronger her bending has become.
In The Waterbending Scroll, Katara tries to teach Aang a giant wave, but she herself can barely move any water before breaking. Whereas in this episode, when attacking the Southern Raiders' ship, she's easily able to knock it off balance using a giant wave.
Also in The Waterbending Scroll, Katara learns the water whip move to push a pirate overboard. Again, something she does with ease to a soldier on the ship in this episode.
And most famously, in The Fortune Teller, Katara stops herself from getting wet by creating a little cover for herself to stop the rain from falling on her. But in this episode, she creates an entire dome around her to stop the rain.
Yeah, I say most famously because that's like the comparison between those two moments is spread around on social media like all the time kind of represent the growth that she has become. And yeah, it's pretty powerful. Like if you look at her covering like the rain over herself in The Fortune Teller to like her stopping the rain here, it's wow.
Oh, it's insane.
And yeah, I mean like it's not the only parallel, but exactly. this is the one that's most spread around on social media, and it does a great job at showing her growth.
Yeah, I agree.
Beyond that, we're also given a reason as to what motivates her to become such a powerful bender and why she works so hard at her craft.
You should get some rest. We'll be there in a few hours. You'll need all your strength.
Oh, don't you worry about my strength. I have plenty. I'm not the helpless little girl I was when they came.
This not only helps us realize how deep this trauma has hurt Katara, but it makes us question if there are some traumas that are too overwhelming to ever fully move beyond. We've seen this throughout the show. as Katara literally carries the burden of this trauma with her by wearing her mother's necklace. It's, wow.
I'm going to start tear bending.
We'll get to that later.
Like, oh God, this whole episode is so freaking sad.
Oh my gosh. And just the sheer amount of strength from Katara. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Especially how she's like able to stop herself.
Exactly.
Like, oh, God.
It's insane.
I know. Okay.
Oh, I forgot Zuko's here too.
Zuko's also a character in this episode. So while Zuko is trying to see Katara's forgiveness, but like helping her get closure with what happened to her mother, he can also relate to what she's been through. Mm-hmm.
While in the catacomb prison in the Crossroads of Destiny, Zuko and Katara could relate to one another about the loss of a mother. Zuko knows that pain that Katara is going through, but he knows his mother is still alive and could have the chance to seek vengeance for her or even try to find her if his father Ozai is defeated.
So he didn't know that she was alive in the Crossroads
at
of
that
Destiny.
Point, yeah.
Like he thought she was dead. Mm-hmm. But after he confronted his father in the eclipse, he said, so she's still alive. And mm-hmm. Ozai said, perhaps. So like he thinks there's a chance she's still alive, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a chance he could still find her.
Exactly.
Yeah. This episode is yet another example, too, of how Zuko does not beg for forgiveness from Katara or use his words to try to persuade her that he's good now. Yes, like when Katara is yelling at him, he does say, like, I don't understand why everyone else has, like, forgiven me, or like he doesn't get why they all like changed their opinions on him and she hasn't. But it is different in that, like, when she tells him why, when she lashes out at him, instead of like rebuking and being like, no, I'm not like that anymore, you don't get it, he says, like, what can I do? Like, what can I, he asks what he can do to redeem himself, like mm-hmm. what he can do to help Katara. He tries to take actions to prove himself rather than like try to convince her otherwise. So that's just kind of going into this theme here with Zuko seeking forgiveness through actions that we've been talking about for the past few episodes.
Good job, Zuko.
Serena, my favorite character was Appa. No.
Why would you even want?
It was Katara, duh. Like, this episode is hers.
Yes.
Entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, the past few journeys with Zuko and Aang and Zuko and Sokka, like, Zuko still had a very present point throughout the episode. But, like, in this one, he really takes a backseat to mm-hmm. Katara's journey.
Yes.
She's great. I love her. I've always loved Katara. I love how this episode shows that even, like, when she's at her strongest, like, she still has so much weight that is put on her. And it really, I don't think that this was intentional. I don't think this episode was made as a response to, like, fans calling Katara, like, oh, she only talks about her mother. Mm-hmm. I don't think this episode was made in a response to that. But it does do a good job at kind of, like, showing people who say that, like, how wrong they are. And it's just, like, you know, trauma is such a difficult thing and it can weigh on people differently.
Exactly.
And I love how they make the comparison to Aang and Sokka in this episode too. Like, Aang was like, how do you think I felt when Appa left, or when they mm-hmm. stole Appa? And how do you think I felt when I found out all of my people died? And even Sokka saying, like, she was my mother too. Different traumas weigh differently on people.
Like, 'cause everyone's different.
Yeah, to varying degrees, mm-hmm. right? And in the Southern Air Temple, way back in season one, I made a note about how it's a little bit strange how quickly Aang moves on from his grief that his entire people are wiped out. But I thought it made sense in the episode, and especially for a kid's show, to kind of just like show what the grief process is like mm-hmm. and like see the optimism on the other end. But this does a great job of like carrying throughout the entire series, and like she doesn't get a resolution.
No.
Like, she says, like, she'll never forgive him. And I don't blame her. Like, she'll be carrying that with her for a long, long time. And mm-hmm. I think that's a really important perspective to have. So
I agree.
I love it. I love how she was written in this episode.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. I mean, Katara is my favorite character, too. The strength that she displays is absolutely, it's mind-bending. It's mm-hmm. pun intended. It's mind-bending. It's heart-bending. It's just like, oh, I have trouble finding a comparison to a character that in any other show, really, that can display that much strength and grace when faced with such a really one of the most difficult circumstances of all, like the death of a loved one, and mm-hmm. not being able to get closure. And vengeance is something, of course, that comes up frequently because, you know, obviously if Fire Nation did kill her mother, mm-hmm. Yanra did kill her mother, but to be able to carry that with you for so long and then learn with it and then carry it in a different way, that's so mature.
Mm-hmm.
It's so mature. Yeah. It's so powerful.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's pretty obvious that I gave this episode a 10.
Yes. Would you like to explain to me why? I'm ready. I'm sitting.
Yeah, okay. So, this is going to be a little fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, it's a great episode. There's a lot of nuance and depth in this episode. And, like, I wasn't even able to fully cover it, right? Like, there's a reason why I kept bringing up that YouTube video, because I was like, I'm not pulling everything out of this episode that needs to be talked about, and this guy has done a lot, so watch him. There's so many, like, minute details that contribute to a much larger picture, and, like, as we just talked about why we like Katara as a character, and I think that really, really gives emphasis to this 10 out of 10. This mm-hmm. is an instance where, like, there are specific things that excel this to a 10. It wows me in certain areas,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like the entire episode is like a wow moment. It's like there are big moments of wow moments. I also feel like this is the most like cinematic episode of the series besides Zuko mm-hmm. alone. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I didn't really feel like I was watching like an episode. I felt like I was watching like a film,
right?
You know, like a short film, I guess. I mean, it has a really perfect like three act structure. It does so much in the way of cinematic storytelling, and like with how young Ra is portrayed and like how the story comes to a conclusion. It's like a really, really beautiful episode. I love this. That being said,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I have problems with this episode that are very minute, but I just want to talk about them for shits and gigs.
Go right ahead.
Because while this is a great episode, it is not a perfect episode. And let's talk about it. So here we go. First of all, why do the airships at the very beginning rise from the bottom? Like, they had to go down into that pit. Why wouldn't they attack on the way down instead of, like, sneaking down there and then rising up from the bottom to attack? That doesn't make sense.
That didn't even really occur to me.
No, right? It's weird.
I mean, it made sense to me when I was watching it.
But, like, how would they have... If they're in a pit, right. How would they have access to the bottom of a pit? And we don't know the elevation of this because, exactly. like, it's a cliff, but, like, mm-hmm. it goes into a pit. It doesn't go into the ocean. So clearly they're at a high elevation. But how do they get there? And also, like, do they just have, like, ships waiting there in case there is, like, a Western Air Temple?
Huh.
Or some, I don't know. It doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah. Now that you bring it up.
Yeah.
Huh.
Right? It kind of bothers me. There's some more things about the airships, and I guess, like, that's why I just noticed, like, why they're rising from the bottom, because I have some more problems with them. Mm-hmm. Briefly, back to a different point super quickly. Zuko is back in his normal clothes, but, like, in the previous episode, he returned from a prison where he was in his prison clothes. How does he get his normal clothes back? Did he just, like, I mean, he clearly didn't take them from the prison when he left, and, like, does he just have extra pairs of clothes all over the place? Or, like,
I mean,
I don't know.
I feel like Zuko's pretty he's pretty keen on his appearance. I would not okay. put it past him that he had extra clothes on hand.
I mean, it would make sense, but it's just,
I mean, it's,
I
the only
know.
Way that he
remember in like 313, what is it, the Firebending Masters, when Aang lost his staff in the thing, and I said I better not see him with his staff ever again.
Yep.
And this is like the I'll same thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's such a minute thing. Have we seen Aang with his staff again?
I better not see Zuko with his clothes again.
No, not his clothes. Okay, I won't object to that.
Yeah, I figured, like, you wouldn't.
His normal clothes. Like, Zuko should be in his prison clothes. Anyway, Zuko falls off the airship, right?
Right.
And then he lands on one, and he's on that one when it rises up, so he's able to attack Azula again.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. That is just plot convenience. That is, like, straight up, like, character survives because
oh, yeah,
he's
yeah,
convenient
yeah.
for the plot.
Yeah, convenience.
Like,
yep.
I agree with that one. Like when he falls off the second time and the gang saves him, but I don't think he should have fallen off a first time only to rise up on the second airship. That's dumb. I don't like it. Appa is carrying six people. King.
Way to go, Appa.
I love him. Okay, so there was so much gay energy between Zuko and Sokka, like, in the last episode. And now, like, we're just going to pretend that, like, Sokka can't even stand to have Zuko in his tent. Like, oh, the writer's got to make it super clear, apparently, how heterosexual Sokka is. No, no, there's no gay energy here. Sokka is going to have sex with Suki. Two minors in a kids' show are going to be having sex. And we are dropping that detail in there. That's so weird to me. You know? Like, ugh, God. Not to say that, like, teenagers aren't sexually active, because they are, but, like, it's just weirder when it's in a kids' show and it's, like, adults writing about this. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. I do see how you can infer from that early 10 scene that Suki and Sokka were gonna, you know, get together.
Yeah, and that's why did that have to be included, you know? I feel like it's just made a joke, but it's a gross joke, you
and
know?
It's also, like, the only time we see Suki, and I'm like, I always want more of Suki.
Mm-hmm.
I felt bashed a little.
Suki is almost kind of just seen as, like, accessory to, yes, Sokka throughout, mm-hmm, this episode, which...
Boo!
Not great for women.
Boo, boo, boo.
Okay, I'm not done yet.
Yep.
Aang and Sokka are mad at Katara when she was going to take Appa, but Sokka was literally going to steal Appa in, like, the last episode.
Oh, that's right.
Like, come on, get off your moral high horse. I mean, I think it was more so Aang that was mad, but, like, why is Sokka on his side? Sokka was going to do the exact same thing.
That's true.
Okay, and this is my last one, but, like, this episode... And this follows through in the rest of the episodes throughout the series, too. But this is when I noticed it. They pull off, like, mega Game of Thrones travel energy here. Do you know what I'm...
Say more about that. I don't know.
So okay. Game of Thrones received a lot of flack in its later seasons for many reasons. But one of the reasons was because, like, in the early seasons, they focused on how long it took people to travel from place to place.
Oh.
And then in,
okay,
the last two seasons, it was basically like they could travel from one end of the country to the other within one episode and no big deal. And that kind of happens again here. Like,
yes,
it took them an entire season to get from the South Pole to the North Pole. But then they're able to go, like, halfway across the world in what, like, 2 days? Mm-hmm. They go from the Western Air Temple to Whale Tail Island, which is literally, like, by the South Pole, and the Western Air Temple is north of the Fire Nation, like, close to Ba Sing Se, in 2 days? Like, what? It just...
Yep, I see exactly what you mean. That's, your attention to detail, Tyler, is impeccable.
Thank you. And they do this in future. They do this in episodes in the finale, too, where they travel, yeah, very quickly, like, across the world. Mm-hmm. And so it just bothers me.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But
how.
This is the one where I noticed it. So, mm-hmm, 10 out of 10 for depiction of trauma and for Katara's character. But, like, if, yeah, it was, if the themes and the character development weren't amazing, this episode would have problems. Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry.
Tyler, you know me. I always enjoy hearing it.
Thank you.
And so do our listeners, obviously, because otherwise they wouldn't be here.
Thank you. What did you rate this episode?
I rated this episode a 9.
Oh, okay.
I am firmly in the position that this should have been 2 episodes.
Okay.
It should have been 2 episodes.
I can get behind that. This should have been a 2-parter.
Yeah, it should have been a 2-parter. It also... they should have spent the entirety of the episode on Katara.
Mm-hmm.
The entirety. So, like, the beginning, forget about it. Like, that should have been...
Yeah, it's like a solid 10 minutes,
yeah,
until they,
yeah,
start
which is a good
Katara's
chunk
into, like,
the episode.
Story.
Yeah, and, I mean, the themes and the characters and are just so potent and so important in this episode that it kind of baffled me a little bit as to why they didn't spend more time on that.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't they, you know, cultivate that more? Because it is a really, really, it's one of my favorite episodes. It should have been a 2-parter.
Because, yeah,
this is solely about Katara, and the show does a great job of carrying this. They should have spent, you know, 2 episodes on that weight.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been present since the beginning.
Yep.
And Sokka got a 2-episode thing.
It's literally brought up in the first, within 10 minutes of the first episode.
Yeah.
Like, it is one of the very first thing Katara brings up.
Yes, this deserves more time.
Mm-hmm.
It deserves more time. I was going back and forth between an 8 and a 9 because of how much I felt that way.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like they were like, okay, now Katara needs a thing. Oh, she talked about her mother. Let's do a thing with Zuko and her mother and so that they can become friends. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like they just put this in here so that Zuko and Katara could reconcile and not solely for the purpose of Katara's, like, you know, growth and healing, which obviously, of course, it's in there too.
I also feel conflicted about, like, the writer of this episode because Elizabeth Welsh Ehas is the only women writer on the team.
That's right.
So I feel weird that they're like, oh, gotta talk about the girl character, give it to the girl writer. But at the same time, she's also done the most character, like, heavy episodes. Like, she wrote Zuko alone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like, oh, we need a deep emotional character connection in this episode. But it still feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they just spent too long, you know, trying to get from one place to another and then into the story. And, I mean, I think it's, everything about it is incredible. Like, you were spot on when you were like, this is a film. I completely agree. It felt like I was watching a film, but the first quarter of the film,
it would definitely be nominated for Best Animated Short at the Oscars some shit.
Like, yes.
I love it.
Yes. It just, take out all the other unnecessary stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a lot of unnecessary
stuff. Get rid of the attack on the Westerner temple by Azula. And, like, why was that necessary? Like,
I don't know.
They didn't need to, like, pick up from the Western Air Temple and move. They didn't need to have an attack. It was just kind of like an action sequence thrown in.
Yep. They just went in. And, well, I am a lover of the action sequences, as everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
This was Katara's thing. This is her huge thing. This is a huge thing to talk about, especially in a kids show. I think it's so important. They should have spent more time on grief and trauma and, you know, how to process that and that revenge. And it's so important and it's so beautifully done. And the writers definitely had the, they definitely could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hands up, I was not a writer. I did not know how all that went.
I agree.
But I think it just deserved more.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
And that's all we have for this episode. A huge thank you goes out to producer and audio engineer Aaron Bogan, along with their production company, Son of M Productions, and Annie Galloway, who made our cover art and is our graphic designer.
Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find us. Don't forget to tell a friend about the show or share the show if you like it.
Please feel free to reach out to us. Our email is airbenderpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram, both at airbenderpod. That's A-I-R, Bender, P-O-D.
I'm Serena Schreifels, the co-host of this show. You can follow me on Instagram at @Serena_Schreifels. That's S-E-R-E-N-A_S-C-H-R-E-I-F-E-L-S.
I'm Tyler Strandberg, the host, creator, and head writer of the show. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram, both at TylerJohn7. That's TylerJohn and the number 7.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I love you.